Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean Gentile from The Athletic.
We had to trade one Sean for another.
I was just going to say I'm Sean from The Athletic and see how long it took.
Well, only one Sean I know has a fucking Pulitzer Prize. You know what I'm saying, brother? So,
yeah, he got one for the Oogwak series. more deserved than mine, that's for sure.
The Pulitzer people cannot get enough of stories about Joe Thornton. You believe it? This guy was in the league this long? He's a former MVP, never won a Stanley Cup.
His beard.
This guy, sometimes he goes tarps off. I don't know if you know about that. And the Pulitzer people hitting themselves over the head with a shoe. Just loving it. I can't believe it. But yeah, regular Sean's on vacation, so we got a different Sean.
Just in case people had not had enough exposure to my opinion on various trade deadline items.
That, yeah, no, exactly. It's not like I wrote this all last week and then we'll be writing it again in like 2 days or anything. Oh, I really, you know, wow. Did you see what Vegas did?
There's not that much other stuff going on, too. So it's stuff that
that is the problem.
It's stuff that we all talked about last week, and it's stuff that we're going to talk about for the rest of this week as well, because
you gotta.
Not that much other stuff going on, folks.
No, it's funny. I was like, okay, let's see, putting together the outline for this episode. I guess John Tortorella got suspended. That's like the only other thing to talk about that isn't like trade related stuff and like trade adjacent stuff.
Can make it happen. Rempy.
I gave my big Rempy opinion last week. I don't give a shit. Who cares?
Guess what? We align on that one.
Shocking. Can you believe it? This guy does fighting. Whoa. Shut up.
I thought we moved past it, though, and now we have another round because of what happened on Monday.
It turns
out
this guy was like a career AHLer. He's not so good at like playing hockey at the NHL level. He makes a mistake sometimes.
One-trick pony, perhaps?
Huh, interesting. Again.
Ryan, this pony, it has but one trick.
And surely that trick is being insanely good at hockey, right? I mean, why else would he be in the NHL? But like I said it last week, you have to say this. I'm not mad at the kid. They're putting him in a situation where it's like, well, do you want to keep making like 10 grand a game or whatever? And he's like, well, I was making like $8.50 an hour down in Hartford. So I guess I'll take the NHL contract.
Do you want me to clean up the dressing, the locker room too? Like,
yeah,
I'll mop the concourses, like whatever. Just keep giving me this money.
Yeah. I can't get mad at the kid about that.
But I think that's actually, we might have seen the pivot yesterday on that, by the way. I think people are going to start getting mad at the kid. I think that's the takeaway because of the elbow on Siegenthaler on Monday in New York and the Devils reacted to it. As I'm reading a pretty solid write-up on this on ESPN.com from some guy named Gord Kablewski. Mm-hmm. And I think the worm has turned.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, totally unforeseeable outcome. Isn't that wild?
It's hard to believe that NHL teams or players or coaches wouldn't get sick of this kid's shit after a certain amount of time.
Huh, that's crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about something that's not that. Let's talk about, let's do the trade deadline wrap-up kind of thing, I guess. Let's start with this question. What was like the big takeaway you had from the overarching trade deadline?
That there aren't enough good centers in the NHL.
There is that, huh?
that was something that I came into the deadline thinking, and despite all the, the deadline, well, I'm sure we'll talk about this in a little bit greater depth, but I think it was more interesting than I anticipated it being because of Hurdle.
Oh, it was crazy.
And because of, you know, a handful of other things, but man, it was the part of the reason I think it was shaping up to be so boring was because there are no tradable centers. Like all the good ones are locked up or completely off limits. And then the end result is like Nick Dowd. No, the Caps are going to hold on to him because he's
Nick Dowd.
You simply must.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting there talking about, you know, wingers getting moved and second pair defensemen getting moved. And that's just not as, it's not as fun. I feel like that's part of the reason that despite Vegas swooping in and rescuing the trade deadline as an entertainment, you know, event, I think that's part of the reason why it seemed like it was shaping up to be boring, because we love centers. They're the most relevant player in the game outside of goaltenders, obviously. And, you know,
yeah,
they're just, they weren't,
goalies
they
aren't
weren't
tradable
moving
either, right?
That only furthers my point, right?
Everyone knows that though, right? Yep. That's the,
everyone yeah, knows that. And yet all of us still talk about coming into the trade deadline, like, Markstrom and Charlie Lindgren and maybe UC Saros and all these guys, like, who knows? Maybe it'll happen, and it never does. You can't even swing a deal for Alex Nedeljkovic. You know, just right. It's just the way it goes.
Or you can get your Jake Allens and who's the other guy the Devils? Kakinen. You can get those guys.
We're just in a situation now too where Kaapo Kakinen is gonna get traded 2 out of every 3 years until he's out of the league at the deadline. Yeah. Like, he's just the guy. He's the guy that moves.
I just feel like there's something to unlock with this guy that the Sharks didn't, you know?
Yeah, it's true that the Sharks didn't and the Wild didn't, and we're about to say that, you know, a year from now it'll be what the Devils didn't, and then he'll be
the Blues,
you know,
couldn't do it.
I see. I didn't even.
But then
did you know? I had forgotten offhand that he played for St. Louis. That he was in their system. Okay. Oh, there you go.
No, I'm saying when the Devils traded to the Blues,
right?
And then when the Blues inevitably trade him to the Montreal Canadiens, you know, the
he's not
going
to get traded to the Blues though, because we're going to keep having this conversation about Jordan Binnington for the next 5 or 7 years or however long. It's never going to end.
No, how could it? You see this? He shoved
not,
the guy.
It's not his fault, though.
No. Look at the guys in front of him. They're on the St. Louis Blues. That's how you know they're bad. Yeah, my big takeaway, I guess, was like prices were way lower than I thought they would be for everybody. Mm-hmm. The number of like solid NHL players that were like, yeah, 2027 fifth round pick conditional. How does that sound? Yeah, sure. No problem. See you out there.
That's Zucker for me. Like when Zucker got moved, I was like, I know he was expensive and whatever else, but I'm like, man, it's conditional sixth or whatever.
Yeah.
Going from Nashville. Jason Zucker is a good hockey player. He's overpaid and he's not having a great season, but dude scored 27 goals for Pittsburgh last year, right? Like he's if you need a guy on your third line, like go get him. And the fact that, you know, that was all he swung was wild. And there's mitigating factors, right? Like whether it's the Tarasenko no trade, the no movement clause that he swung to only land in Florida or whatever, there's mitigating factors that make the prices drop. But at the same time, that's what the prices are. And I think we definitely saw a solid amount of that.
Well, the trade that kind of stands out like this for me is the Toffoli deal.
Oh, absolutely.
50% retained, you only get a 2024 third and a 2025 second. Like,
for a guaranteed 30 goal scorer at this point.
Yeah, a guy who is just like, oh, I'm gonna be asleep. And
you
then
can
I'll
you
still
can
score.
Write that in pen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And yeah, they just like that was what all the Devils were gonna get for him, you know.
Which, like, rightfully, that's a big part of what made Canucks fans lose their mind, especially particularly about Toffoli, because the price, you're like, this isn't beatable for for anybody. All these players that are that's why, you know, the Jets. Not that it was a surprise to see the Jets pull the trigger on it, right? But
they had to at that price. That they didn't have
absolutely
an
they had it would have been. Imagine if the Jets wouldn't have done the deal that they did, and Toffoli went for even less.
Yeah,
it's just like fired Cheval Day off the next day.
Yeah, he's so good. He's so, like, well, I mean, there are obviously holes in his game, but he's so good at putting the puck in the net. And
totally,
know, you and he's talking about a kind of guy the Jets need. The guy that scores is helpful.
They needed a scoring winger really, really badly. It multiple times throughout the season, you know, whether you're looking at their stats or you're watching their game or you're just looking at their at their lineup, you're like, is this it? This is what we're talking about here. And
yeah,
they needed a guy like that for sure. And then on top of all of it, Toffoli, he's won cups and he's a good teammate and all this stuff. Like he checks a lot of the other intangible boxes too, which is always relevant when you're talking about price or market or what have you.
Sure.
And
yeah,
it's a, that I don't, pound for pound, that might be my favorite day, my favorite trade of the day.
Now, there was one that made me laugh out loud, and it was the Thomas Hurdle trade.
I guess.
Because they were like, oh, Vegas got one more thing in the hopper, and you're like, oh, okay, you know, they're gonna go get, like, you know, a third string goalie or something like that, because those guys, they can turn into superstars, right? They're just like, oh, yeah, that guy, he won a Stanley Cup. Was he any good before that?
I'm mad that I didn't see it coming. You're like, oh, of course.
How could you have? Honestly, how could you have?
Because San Jose's actively trying to lose games, and that contract could look bad in 3 years.
Yeah, but it's the retain it. Like, they would have needed to retain money if they traded him anywhere, you know? And
we disagree on the San Jose end of this trade, so it might be a good thing to talk about.
All right, let's just
an F minus, right, and I thought San Jose did a pretty good job. I thought it made sense for them.
It makes sense in so far. Like, okay, here's why I think it doesn't make sense. And it's pretty straightforward. They got almost nothing back for him. Edstrom is like not really a guy that is gonna like make it in the NHL by all accounts.
I don't know.
He's a kind of a lower end roster guy. Like, he's not going to be a game changer.
I'm not going to pretend to know, like, what...
Oh, I'm going by what I've read. Totally.
100%. What I've read from Scott Wheeler and Bronman was that they think he can be a second line center.
Oh, okay. That's a higher projection
affected. And I know, you know, I don't want to get into that whole thing because, like, who really knows about these guys? But if I see enough, I gotta go by their assessment, I think. In a lot of ways, I'm like, yeah, he could end up being a second line center. Definitely will be a good third line center. That's kind of was the consensus that I saw, at least. I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Okay. Well.
But you also work for Elite Prospects, and yeah, people's opinions can differ.
As far as I can tell, oh wait, no, I'm looking at the wrong team. That's funny because I typed in Sharks pipeline rankings and then was like, hey, wait a second. Let's see, Edstrom. He was the fourth pick or the fourth rated prospect in the 29th rated, prospect pool. To translate to the NHL, Edstrom must improve his edge work and off the pass shooting. That seems doable. He's unlikely to become a play driver. Maybe he sneaks into the top six in the right situation. Now, so the thing is, with the way the Sharks rebuild is going, he could be in the top six next year. They're not going to have any fucking guys.
Where is he right now? Is he on a...
That's exactly right. He's, you know, he might maybe bottom of the lineup for them. But yeah, like as a going concern, I guess, is the, you know, he seems like a third line guy. But... Then they only get a pick for the Vegas's first round pick, which now you're looking at it and you're like, okay, 28th maybe, like at the latest. And they send back two third round picks in addition to Hurdle. And this is the thing that I was just like, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah.
They retained 17%. Right? Like, they retained 17% for
which for is about $8 million over the course of that deal.
Right. So, but right, it's a year's worth of his money. They're just like, oh, we'll take that. And this is the crucial part for that, though. That means they have no salary retention spots for next season, and they only have one every year till 2027.
Yeah. That's something I should have thought about more. I think that's an element that I didn't consider enough when I was writing about this. I get it.
And to do it in the division against the team that is, you know, allegedly your arch rival or whatever. It's just like,
I care less about that. I'm sort of I'm of the mindset that you do the best deal regardless of where it is, except in very rare circumstances.
To me, it's like you don't want – if they had traded him without salary retention, I'm with you. I don't give a shit. But the fact that they're retaining salary for a team that, you know, in theory, by 2030, they should be competing with – you know?
Yeah.
Because that's when the salary retention on
and
this
also,
ends,
and
folks.
Also a thing I didn't consider. A thing I didn't consider, too. This has to be part... This usually is part of the calculus or whatever, the arithmetic, whenever I'm thinking about this sort of stuff, is I don't think I considered how much Sharks fans would hate this deal. Like, truly, truly angry, and, like, it was... It seems like they alienated people with this one, which I guess I didn't really see coming. But where I land on it, I think, is that he has a uniquely high amount of value for the Vegas Golden Knights and a uniquely low amount of value for the San Jose Sharks, which is why moving on from him now made sense to me, and why Vegas trading for him made so much sense to me. Like, I think the letters I might have screwed up. Like, if I would have, you know, thought about it for more than 15 minutes, like, while I was writing, I probably wouldn't have thrown an A- on the Sharks deal. But I still do think that it's like, I think there's a chance that 3 years from now that deal's a catastrophe.
I totally agree with that. But Vegas, you know, say what you want about them. They're like, oh, we'll launch these guys into the fucking sun.
Well, I'm saying that with regards to the Sharks. I Vegas, I'm give them, who cares? Even if they can't. Like, yeah, try to win fucking championships in the next few years. That's all that matters. Who cares if they suck in 4 years? The only thing that matters is for them, as it should be, is what happens from now until, you know, Pietrangelo completely ages out or Eichel gets hurt again. Like, they're either going to be terrible or find some other way to get out of it whenever shit hits the fan in 2027 or whatever. In the meantime, you know, go try to win 3 out of 4 or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it just, when they said this trade, I literally, like, was like, holy fuck, like, out loud in my basement alone. Just like, whoa!
Totally. And part of the reason
crazy
is Edstrom, I guess, my coworkers like him more, and I'd asked around about him more in context with Vegas trying to get Jake Guentzel, just to see what he would have looked like as a piece coming back to Pittsburgh. And, like, I heard some decent things about him. So I guess I came into it thinking, like, oh, this guy's pretty legit. Like, he's not going to be, you know, a franchise center, but if he's like a pretty good second line guy with a floor of third liner, then, like, it's relevant.
Yeah,
probably more than they would have gotten in 3 years whenever Hurdle really starts to decline, and then that contract becomes completely immovable.
Well, the other thing that you have to say about this, and this is all Sharks related, I guess, but, like, they just shouldn't have fucking re-signed him. And I know Mike Greer wasn't the guy who did it. I know that. And
interim GM did that.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't even Doug Wilson.
Oy. Yep. Yeah, I guess that's true, huh? That's tough. That's, you know, but the one thing that I am encouraged by for the Sharks is that this means they're going full teardown mode. They're like, okay, we tried it with the, like, let's keep Logan Couture and all these guys totally around. And, it didn't work out due to how bad we are. And, you know, again, some of that's Doug Wilson and some of that's just ownership going like, well, you're not allowed to trade these guys.
Right.
You know, I guess it started with Timo Meier last year, but, like, that return was a little underwhelming.
It was.
And the Erik Karlsson return was a little underwhelming. And the Tomas Hertl return is a little underwhelming. And it's like, oh, I guess this is the thing I wrote over the weekend. Like, they go, oh, tearing it down is the easy part. And Mike Greer's like, I don't agree with you. I think it's actually pretty hard.
I think a lot of it has to do with just the degree to which those, like, there is so much money in so many years.
Absolutely.
In onerous, like no movement clauses across the board, like that, you know, combined. And I don't want to overly defend Mike Grier here, because, you know, if you take 75 cents on the dollar three separate times, then, you know, whatever.
That's a you problem. That's it. Yeah,
that's
sure.
That indicates something. But the situation was truly catastrophic. And by the way, he's still, we got two more years left of Mark Edward Vlasic at $7 million.
Without, yeah, any deal they can trade, they can swing to make that.
I guess that maybe that's problem. Part of the reason you saw them use their last retention slot for next year on.
Don't try to bully me
on Hurdle, because they're like, there's no sense in even keeping one open for this guy, because it ain't happening.
Yeah. I know that Vlasic has a couple bonuses built into his contract, but I just wonder if they still just go like, fuck it, we're buying him out. I can't sit here and keep doing this.
I think once you get into the 2 years remaining range, that becomes that the odds of it happening go up significantly.
Yeah,
or go down significantly, I should say.
The other guy is Logan Couture. Like, he over the, like, in the past week announced he's done for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of like kind of frank conversations about or you know, quotes rather, about like, mm-hmm. yeah, this might be it for me. I might not be playing here next year. I'm 30. I'm gonna be 35 or whatever. Yeah, he's 35 in a couple of weeks. Look at that.
35 in a couple weeks, makes $8 million against the cap for the three seasons after this one. He has a modified no trade.
Yeah, and that modified, only three teams he can be traded to.
Heavily, heavily modified, yes.
Ay, 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 man.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed, yeah.
The thing, look, like he sounded like a guy who was like, I might have to open my scope.
Yeah, I don't think
the scope a little bit here.
Yeah, I don't think he's like,
trade me to Toronto or nothing else, right? Like,
even beyond that, it's just like, I don't think he's going like, I need to be precious about this one. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. He's like, I think it's time to go, and I should. And
yeah, he sees it's the knowing it's time to go thing that is. Not always what you see in the NHL, let's say.
Because he, due to his age and injury status and decline in play over the previous couple seasons, he doesn't have the leverage of, in his contract for that matter, he doesn't have the leverage of, we're not talking Patrick Kane, Noah Hanifin, you know, where you can swing it around and say like, here are the actual one team or three teams or five teams that I want to end up on. Like, he needs to just get the hell out of Dodge.
Absolutely, yeah. And who could, like I said, I'm glad the Sharks are doing like a blow it up rebuild, but.
And they were never going to be able to do that with Hurdle on the roster.
For sure, yeah. Too good.
True negative value, because it is within the realm of possibility that he would drag them to six extra points next season, and then boom. If he's healthy, then you're, then what? You got your fourth in lottery odds rather than one.
Right.
No, thank you.
Yeah. It just sucks that they have to do the full tear it down rebuild after trying to rebuild on the fly and having it blow up in their face. And now it's like, oh yeah, we have Michael Granlund on the team. Like, oh no, man.
Michael, you know what's funny is that Granlund hasn't been that bad, and that is 100%. Them taking him on was not like, oh, maybe we can win some games with this guy. It was like Pittsburgh sending back a short-term problem for them. And then he ended up being like, you know, the best forward on one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, he's just not a $5 million player.
They weren't deluding themselves, and I think they're going to win games with Michael Granlund. It was just a necessary return on the Pittsburgh end of things to make the Carlson trade happen.
For sure. But yeah, I mean, just like, they, I get, what is it? Even if you're being like as bad as possible, you can't have like no good players on your roster. And like, not that Michael Granlund is like a good player, he's just a fine player.
Because there's a salary floor, like without guys, like especially moving forward too, depending on what happens with Vlasic, like in Couture, we're looking at it a year or two from now, they're going to have to take on salary to scrape by up the salary floor.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. So, well, what can you do? Anyway, let's talk about it, the Vegas part of it. Well, they got Thomas Hurdle for almost nothing, like nothing that affects them in any real way.
Pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
It's just it's such a perfect fit too, because Hurdle, you know, much as everyone loves him, if he's your best player, you're probably not you're not going to be a real contender, right?
Yeah.
Like he's a 1C on a mediocre to bad team, but as a 2C, oh baby.
On any team.
And they're right. And on top of it, they're paying him like a second line center as well by virtue of the 17% that
And how about Vegas this? Retained. He might not even be their second line center. He might be their third center.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
I think he'll be their second line center.
Yeah, well, it's just like, oh, yeah. They also have William Karlsson and Chandler Stephenson down the middle. Oh, I guess that's pretty good.
Can you move Chandler Stephenson to the wing for the playoffs?
Oh, yeah, I would think that's the move.
I love it, man. This is the point. This is why teams play hockey is to be able to load up like this and really make a run for it. Another one. Like the stakes are high. Like they're looking at this roster and being like, we can win three straight or whatever. We can be
totally.
You know, this decade's quasi dynasty. And they're right to do it. People like also they traded for Anthony Mantha too.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Noah Hanifin.
Forget about Hanifin, but like,
yeah.
You look at that group of forwards now. It couldn't make more sense. I love it.
It's so funny that like, yeah, you just like oh their seventh best forward is Anthony Mantha, a guy who had scored 30 goals like 2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, and was like. You know, like I said this whenever it happened too. Like, would I sign that guy to an extension? No, absolutely not.
No,
like,
for sure not.
Yeah. Send him to market. Let him take whatever he can get. He was really, really good for Washington. Like, some of it was a shooting percentage heater, but not all of it. Just a really efficient 5-on-5 scorer. His play driving numbers were a whole lot better than they had been in the past. And you just say like, all right, great. Like you can play on a third line or a second line and go and try to port that over. And if it doesn't work, like, or whether it doesn't work or whether it works really well, like good luck with your new team come July.
Yeah. Yeah. He has 20 goals this year. Pretty good. Pretty good. And they got him for, again, not very much at all. What okay, so there's this like debate now about not just the fucking they're doing LTIR, that's not fair, but like fans are like, I'm not saying it because I'm jealous, it's the principle of the thing or whatever.
It's okay to be jealous about this, just recognize that you're jealous. Like fans, like that's all it is. They're mad that they don't have an owner that's willing to do this, and they don't have a front office that's willing to execute the plan. Like you'd be salty about it. It's like people being mad about the Rangers, like or the Wings during the no salary cap era. I'd be mad about it too, but you know, tough shit.
Yeah. So this is the argument that someone put on the Puck Soup Discord today. It's that they're always miraculously healed for game one of the playoffs.
Yeah. That's because that's an NHL problem. That's a failure by the league.
Here's the thing. I don't think it is. I think they're – look, I think we said this when Tampa did it with Kucherov, right, where it's like, is he injured enough to play or to be out of the lineup? Yes. So what they're doing is, but like, he's not so injured that he couldn't play if he didn't have to. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is they are making the calculated risk. We have enough good players here that we will get into the playoffs.
Yeah. I said this on the Athletic show last week. Like there's an element of risk management for Vegas too, because you're assuming that or Tampa or whoever does it. You're saying like, okay, we are accepting the fact that we're going to be without Mark Stone and Alec Martinez or Nikita Kucherov in Tampa's case or whoever until the start of the playoffs. If you want to roll the dice on that and say like, we're going to have to perform in these guys' absence, like that's a choice. And there's a payoff for that.
And it compels you, if you're going to do that, to make these kinds of wild ass trades, right? Where it's just like, you know what? Let's just get like three of the four biggest names on the market. Let's do it. Or three, maybe six or whatever, you know, where depending on where you slot Anthony Mantha. It's just like, yeah, let's fucking do it then. You know, like.
The issue is that like there's only one. I mean, insofar as people are upset about this is that there aren't that many teams that are willing to exploit it as aggressively as Vegas and Tampa are.
Or able to, because that's the thing. Vegas has horrible injury history, right? Like going back, I think even to like their first year. Remember they were like, oh yeah, we're down to our fourth string goalie for like a week and a half or whatever in that first season. Mm-hmm. And those guys were winning too, right? But this is like a problem for Vegas, I would argue, that like, oh, we can't keep any of our guys healthy for you know, look at their games played leaders among their best players. It's always like 70 games, 68 games, right? Yeah. Like it's rare that a guy's just like in the lineup every single
it's
night.
It's because their two best forwards are like to some extent chronically injured.
Yeah, well, right.
Stone and Eichel and whatever else. Other teams could do this, though.
Other teams could do it. You got to say that.
Because, I mean, look at Pittsburgh, right? If Pittsburgh were good this season, which they're certainly not, they could have stashed Jake Guentzel on long-term injury reserve until the end of the regular season if they wanted to. He broke his wrist. Like, just whatever. He had a setback. And then he's magically okay for game one. That was never going to happen. Just like... Most good teams have a star player who makes a bunch of money that goes on short or what normal IR at some point during the season. If they wanted to extend it to its you know max out and take it to its logical end, like most teams could do this, they just don't want to. And that's fine. That's a choice too.
And part of that is just like. Not having the same amount of confidence, I guess you would say, that Vegas does, where it's like, well, we'll just make the playoffs without these guys.
Right. And that's what people are mad about, is that, and also there's a level of propriety and politeness, I think, that a lot of front offices just don't want to cross, or a line that they don't want to cross, despite it being a legal mechanism, you know.
That's within, the thing. They're not breaking any rules. You can say the rule's fucked up, but can you come up with a better one? I think this is a Drantz take.
You can come up with a better...
What would the rule adjustment be for you?
That you're allowed to overshoot the salary cap during the only way you're allowed to exceed the salary cap during the playoffs is by having players signed to league minimum deals, which is what the NBA does.
It's
a button that the league doesn't want to push for whatever reason, and that's on them. We've seen the league act unilaterally on this kind of shit with regard going back to backdiving contracts in the Ilya Kovalchuk thing. Like they have no problems making this shit up as they go along.
Sure.
And they're choosing not to here. So whatever.
I think the issue with that is that players aren't paid during the playoffs. Right. And so to be like, well, of course the thing, I guess I don't know. I'm assuming NBA players aren't getting game checks for making postseason runs. Right. So,
It's not an unsolvable problem, and to act like it is disingenuous. They're choosing not to solve it, which is fine. Sure. this is the system that they've created, And ultimately what it comes down to is like one is that there's a couple teams that are comfortable and willing to exploit it and other ones aren't. So live with it or don't like be mad about it, but it's not, I think where I have problems is that the argument takes on this weird like moral quality that like this is something that's that exactly Vegas shouldn't right. be doing. It's like, what are you talking about? They're making choices here just like everybody else is. And it ultimately just really seems like sour grapes from teams that don't have that are fans of teams that aren't willing to pull these levers. So that's just the way it goes.
Right. Okay, let's talk very quickly and then we'll take a break about Calgary and how their whole letting everybody go thing went.
Probably wish it would have gone better.
Oh, I bet they do. If I had to make a big guess, that would be my guess, is that they got very little back for all their big guys and all the talk about the whole season about what are they going to do with these guys. They did next to nothing to drum up the price, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. And also, these are good players that have no trade, that have no movement clauses, and they were willing to use them.
Yeah.
You know, and you have a rookie GM who was probably very cognizant of not looking like a jackass throughout the course of it, and it made him be overly cautious.
Yeah.
Team's a mess.
A mess, my friend. You are correct. I made the point last week with the Tanev deal where, you know, they were like, oh, this guy that we're gonna trade you. We really don't want to trade, but you know what? For you, we'll throw him in there, you know. And Craig Conroy was like, "So I was really happy with that." And then you read about him, and it's like, okay, well, I mean, they weren't like dying to keep him around in Dallas, you know. Like they didn't. The comparison I made was Tom Sawyer being like, "Oh, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want to faint this fence, though." I mean, come on, you want to? I don't think I'm having too much fun over here.
Go for
it's the same. It's the same idea.
Got my big brush. No, it's true.
I'm probably going to be real mad if I let you. But I mean, if you really want to, you know, it's the same thing. And I feel like that happened to a lesser extent with the Hanifin trade.
Also, like, man, we really don't want to trade this guy. If we're going to, we'll throw him in, and you should probably extend him immediately for 2 years, right? Yeah. He's that good. Well, the player you want to keep around. Definitely, we all love 26-year-olds who recently changed positions.
This is, to me, this is the number one thing of how you know Craig Conroy wasn't ready to be sitting at the big table.
Mm-hmm.
Was Vegas was like, we'll give you our first round pick for Hanifin. And he's like, great. And they're like, but we get to decide when you get it because we're going to
trade for
that one.
Yeah.
We get to decide what the condition is that you get, because usually it's just like, oh, it's top 10 protected. That's kind of out of the team's hand. And they were just like, no, what if we want to keep the pick though? And Craig Conroy was like, well, no problem. That sounds great.
Very funny.
And yeah, they then use that on Tomas Hertl and it's like, oh shit. Okay, well. That was why they wanted to keep it so bad. I do wonder when they got that iron in the fire, the Hurdle iron. But
I think probably once they realized that Guentzel wasn't, or that was more feasible than Guentzel.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, they got that Nikita Ohotyuk guy back from San Jose in a separate trade. That's almost like Now, Nikita Ohotyuk is a guy that the Sharks had a look at in the AHL and were like, never mind. We'll take a fifth for him.
Can you imagine that?
But he's only like 22 or whatever, so you can talk yourself into. Actually, it was a pretty good trade for Calgary.
It's a lot of talking folks' selves into things over the next few years there.
They've been doing it for probably a decade at this point, man. It's actually, you know...
Chase that playoff money, brother.
Yep, that's all they do. Okay, why don't we finally take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about more stuff. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Hatch. And folks, we just went through daylight savings time. I don't know if we're in daylight savings time now or out of it. I don't know how that works. But I do know this. It disrupts your sleep schedule. You're losing an hour and all that kind of stuff. I don't like that. You don't like it either, right? But that's where Hatch comes in. Because Hatch can help you choose sleep, prioritize healthy habits, and make the time change transition seamless and enjoyable. With the Hatch Restore, it will help you build sleep habits that make your routines for unwinding at night, waking up in the morning, really simple, really enjoyable, really easy, and gives you a phone-free bedtime no matter what time of year it is. And with the Hatch Plus subscription, you can access the latest routine-building features like Cue to Unwind, which signals to you that it's time for bed, and Pillow Talk, which is like your favorite shows or socials, but no screens at all. I've talked about this before. I use the Hatch to go to bed and wake up, and it's really helped me get on more of a solid sleep schedule, and yeah, it's going great. I really enjoy it, you know. Waking up to the sound of crashing waves in the morning, it's better than that horrible phone alarm clock noise. So that's just something for you to keep in mind. If all that sounds good to you, here's what you're going to want to do. Right now, Hatch is offering our listeners $20 off your purchase of the Hatch Restore and free shipping at hatch.co/puck. Visit hatch.co/puck to get $20 off and free shipping. hatch.co/puck. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by ExpressVPN. And folks, we all love the internet, right? Clicking around on there, listening to things, watching things, etc. But here's the problem. If you're using the internet without a VPN, like ExpressVPN, it's a little like driving your car without car insurance. Privacy risks, etc. Why take that risk? Because here's the thing, folks. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, whether it's like a cafe, a hotel, an airport, that kind of thing, anyone who's on the same network can use that network to gain access to your personal data, like your passwords, your financial details, etc. They don't even have to be that smart. They don't have to have like sophisticated technology. A child could do it. It says here, a smart child, but a child nonetheless. Your data is valuable, and hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal info on the dark web. You don't want to play those games, you know? But that's where ExpressVPN comes in, because it creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Hackers can't get your personal data. How about that? It's super secure, because it'd take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years, it's a billion with a B, to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. All you got to do is this. You fire up the app, you click a button, boom, done. Nothing to worry about. Your phones, your laptops, your tablets, so much more can all stay protected on the go. I've talked about ExpressVPN before. You know, I'm going to various hockey rinks, connecting to various, you know, coffee shops and that kind of thing. I can't be just hopping on their public Wi-Fi, putting all my takes at risk, you know? Somebody's going to log on there. They're going to see all my takes. They're going to say, this guy's a genius. I don't want that. That's where ExpressVPN really helps me. So if you want to be like me, here's what you're going to do. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/puck. That's expressvpn.com/puck. And you get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/puck. All right. We talked about one Western Conference team making big moves. Let's talk about another. The Colorado Avalanche. They get Sean Walker. They get Casey Mittelstadt. They get Brandon Duhaime. They get Yakov Trenin.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another guy that I'm forgetting, but I think those are the big ones.
Yeah, I think those are. That's about right. You said Duhaime, yeah. Right?
I did say Duhaime.
Mm-hmm.
How about those Avs loading up? I love it.
So, what was the first? It was Sean Walker. They made the Sean Walker trade, and I made the foolish rookie mistake of starting to write the trade grade before, A, I knew what the return was, which wasn't that big of a deal, but also with the presupposition that took them, that they just said, all right, we can't acquire a second line center, so we're just going to get better in other areas.
Yep.
And by the time I was like almost done writing it, they had pulled off, or there had been, you know, rumbles of Mittelstadt for Bo Byram. So I had to go back and rewrite it because my assumption at that point was like, yeah, the center market is what it is. They're certainly not going to do any kind of future focus hockey trade that involves, you know, a kind of fallen top prospect for someone from an Atlantic Division team. So I wrote it up as if, you know, this is it. And it's like, okay, this is the best they can do. They figured, okay, we're not going to be able to fix our middle six in season for a variety of reasons. So we might as well try to get better, you know, along the right side of our defense. And that wasn't the case. They go out and get Mittelstedt, which is just in a normal trade deadline year, or on a normal trade deadline, that would be, you know, the headline A1 most interesting deal of the day. And I think it's still pretty close. I love it.
Yeah. Awesome. Just, you know, not one that anybody really saw coming. And that's what's cool about it.
Because it was such a glaring hole for them too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get why they tried Johansson. Didn't work.
Did not work.
Ross Colton's a useful player, but, you know, having him as your 2C on a good team is courting disaster.
Not gonna fly, yeah.
And the end result was that between those two guys who had split time in that spot since the start of March, they had 11 points between them on the day of the trade deadline, which, like, never going to work. There's going to be, they would have played Dallas, Haskinen and some combination of Dallas's top forward lines would have neutralized
them alive. Yeah.
Would have neutralized McKinnon, the McKinnon line. Like they would have canceled them out in one way or another. And then the end result is like, you're trying to roll Ross Colton and Jonathan Drouin out there against one of the deepest teams in the league. Like it wasn't going to work. So the fact that they pulled it off, man, I just, all points. I love it.
Yeah, it's really cool. And again, it just, you just didn't see them trading Bo Byron.
Nope.
And they did. And I think it takes big balls to make that kind of a trade, just given how everybody has talked about Bo Byram, including me, for years.
It's the rare case of really liking a trade for both teams. Because I know Bo Byram's, you know, the numbers are ugly and who knows, but Mittelstedt just wasn't going to work on that in their salary structure presently. In the future, like it just, it, right. they were going to need to address, you know, the mix that they had at forward, even if only for cap purposes. And they went out and got a player that they didn't have in their system. You know, like there's no, say what you will about Bo Byram, but there wasn't any version of him coming up for the Sabres that would have made sense. So I don't know. I fully realize that the bloom's off the rose for Byram, but I still really do like it on the Buffalo and things as well.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a big risk for Buffalo, just a guy who can't stay healthy. And it's, you know, if we're being honest about the Sabres, it's not exactly an organization known for getting the most out of its defensemen.
Totally.
So that's there's a lot of risk there for me, but like I think I agree that it's worth the risk. Just because, you know, they didn't really, like you said, they didn't really have any other options.
And they were going to have to pay Mittelstedt more. He was always going to be the third line center there. They have a bunch of guys coming up that they're going to, in a perfect world, they're going to need to pay at some point over the next few years. So I don't know. And like I said, I'm fully aware that the way the last few years have gone for Bo Byram, but it's fun. I think maybe that might be, I might be conflating, like thinking it's a good deal for both teams.
Yeah.
With it being a cool deal for both
you
teams
understand.
And a fun
it
deal for both
yeah.
teams.
Yep. So yeah, to me, I like that deal to varying extents for both teams. But when you add in, okay, now they've gotten Walker and Mittelstedt in what is basically kind of one trade,
right?
You know, kind of like a three-way deal. Okay, I like that, yeah. And then they go out and add Brandon Duhaime, who I'm a big fan of. I saw him play plenty of
totally.
He played at Providence, so I saw him a decent amount in his college days. And, you know, he's translated to being exactly the same kind of player in
Love
the NHL.
Love to see that, too.
He is a huge pain in the ass to play against.
He's a shit disturber who also can play hockey. And those are my favorite types of guys.
Same here. Yeah. I love guys like that. And so for them to get him, and you know, he's a good PK guy and all that kind of stuff. It's just adding up a little bit more, forward depth, you know? And then Yakov Trenin, like, you know, he's an okay player. That's fine.
Yeah, Duhaime's the kind of guy who they had a few years ago and that they've lacked since, which is like that bottom six guy who gives you some juice, right? Like he can play hockey, and he seems like a dude who you can easily imagine him scoring some huge goal during the Western Conference Finals or something. He just profiles as that kind of guy.
Yeah. One shorthanded goal in the playoffs in this trade has paid for itself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like,
it's that simple. That's just a player I like. I'm trying to remember. I don't have their cap friendly page open. I guess I could just click on it.
They actually have some money left over, because I was wondering if they would be.
No. So what I was going to ask is if he's a pending UFA, and he is.
Oh, Duhaime? Yeah, he is.
Yeah. But like a guy that easily can see them bringing him back. He's only 26, 27. You know, like he's got a few more years of being useful, and he's not going to cost him a ton. Like, he could sign the kind of regrettable like Miles Wood deal that, you know, like maybe you don't go give me the full 8 years or whatever Wood got, but you know, four years at $2 million a pop, you're happy with that one for Brandon Duhaime, I think.
Definitely, they're shared DNA, I think, between that. In Tanner Janot, where you're like, this guy, and Tanner Janot may stink, which is the problem for Tampa Bay, but like,
right.
You're like, this guy in some way, how much money is he going to make really after this season? Then you sign him long term and you're like, all right, this guy is going to be part of our middle six for as long as we're good.
Yep.
Or bottom six rather.
Yep.
And also Gabriel Landeskog may be coming back at some point during the playoff stuff has officially begun. I saw LeBron just publish something, you know, where he talked to Chris McFarland talking about Landeskog's rehab and like where he's at and saying like, yeah, it might happen. You never know. And that's where we are.
It should be illegal for them to do it.
I agree. They shouldn't be allowed.
No, they should have to go before the Hague for doing this.
It's
the principle of the thing, you know?
There's just no way that, you know, that every injury has different timelines and stuff actually happens that, you know, causes players to come back more quickly than anticipated or sit longer than we thought.
That's
can't be
right.
done.
Yeah. My response to all that, of course, grow up. Get a life.
I didn't say that.
No, I did. That's me. Were you surprised that Philly sold a little bit, actually, at the deadline?
No. Not at all.
I was a little bit. I didn't. I guess I'm not surprised they sold Walker.
Nope.
But, like, they – just because, like, that's how it went. But, like, they replaced him with Eric Johnson, which was really funny to me.
That's just throwing a bone to the locker room. You're like, all right, like, sorry.
To John Tortorella specifically. He's in the locker
room. Yeah, Torts and the players, right? They're like, yeah, sorry, we didn't, you know, kind of had to do this. Like, here's a good guy who you can con yourself into thinking is, like, a meaningful ad for the stretch run if you're a player, right?
Yeah.
Like, back to the original question, I'm not surprised it happened because – I think Daniel Briere's shown signs of being pretty good at his job.
I agree.
I think he's making some tough decisions. I think he's showing some creativity, relatively speaking, when it comes to getting involved in three-way deals and retaining salary or whatever. That you don't see from a lot of other general managers, honestly. And the job was tough to begin with, and it only got more complicated when it turned out that they're like not a terrible hockey team, right? Like that was a minefield for him to navigate.
Yep.
And I think moving Walker, once you realized that he was just looking for more than they could have done, and then kind of softening the blow by bringing in Johnson, I think that's a really good move. I liked what they did, but I'm also at this point like not super surprised that that's the way it played out, because I think he's pretty good at his job.
Yeah. Did you see what Elliot Friedman said yesterday on 32 Thoughts about why the Flyers traded for him and then immediately waived him?
Yeah, because him and Tortorella hated each other, I assume.
Yep. And this is the funny part to me. Hard feelings towards a shared agent with Carter Gauthier.
Not surprised by that one either.
I'm surprised by that.
Are you like, really? Like with the shit that they said whenever the Carter Gauthier thing, you know, really hit the fan earlier this season? I'm not surprised to see that they wouldn't want anything to do with anybody.
You'd be mad at the agent is kind of surprising to me.
Yes, because NHL front offices, they're typically populated by guys that aren't weirdos who hold grudges.
Sure, but we're just talking about like
all this is made a lot more like that's all well and good, and I'm not saying that that didn't play a part, but it's all made a whole lot easier by the fact that Johansson's done.
Oh. Yeah, for sure.
If he was still a relevant NHL player who is, you know, capable of helping more than he is, or you know, maybe it was a guy who you could have conceivably flipped to another team that wanted him, like, I don't think we hear about all this. But now it's like, well, okay, this is the way it went down. And we're just doing some sort of after the fact analysis of why it went down the way it did. Yeah. Even if it's coming from the front office, it's either, yeah, well, there's hard feelings because it's Carter Gauthier's agent, da 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 da. Like, ultimately, what it comes down to is that Ryan Johansson ain't good no more. That's the problem.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I just think it's I when it's like, we're mad at the agent, so this player can go fuck himself. It's like, huh?
I believe that they believe that that's that played a part. I'm not saying it didn't, but like again, if Ryan Johansson is a little bit better, I think the conversation might be different.
Yeah. But again, at that point, it's like, why trade for him?
Because you had to.
Other than you got to make the salary. Yeah, sure. But yep, I was just really laughing about that yesterday. I had nothing.
It's funny. It's funny. And that's from an entertainment standpoint, that's why this phase of this era of the Flyers organization is a lot of fun, because we could easily see more of that.
Yeah.
Just like kind of petty stuff that happens around the margins. I'm down for it.
Sure. Yeah. The Edmonton Oilers make a couple of trades. The most notable are Adam Henrique and Troy Stetcher.
Mm-hmm.
That's it though. They were in a tough spot. All their guys are healthy.
Henrik's kind of a two for one too, because he's played more. He's more of a wing at this point in his career.
Sure.
Which I feel like maybe got kind of lost, and whenever they acquired him, like he wasn't really playing center for Anaheim anymore, but he still can.
Allegedly.
Yeah. So you get some positional versatility there. It seems like they would maybe have a use for Sam Carrick, which isn't, you know, good for them, I suppose. I think they're in a tough spot. I disliked what they did, I think, less than other people, because Henrik and Stetcher are useful and they didn't have much in the way of cap space or assets or whatever else to offer anybody else.
Yeah, you want to talk about getting creative.
Yeah.
Like I just thought they might have done something a little more creative than they ultimately did, but
I think that's like a standard, it's like a standard job done by an NHL front office at the trade deadline. Like that's boilerplate stuff. I think it's fine. I don't think they got like significantly better, but they improved a bit. And they went about doing it in a very traditional way, which is what you'd expect.
I don't remember now. What wasn't there, like, we couldn't get someone to take Cody Ceci and we had a trade done otherwise or something like that? Am I remembering that wrong?
I know all of the dialogue around them kind of centered around Cody Ceci, which just seemed, I don't know. He's not that bad.
Yeah, he's just not a $3.25 million player.
If you trade Cody Ceci, you have to replace Cody Ceci in that lineup, and I think that was always going to be a problem for them.
Yeah. And again, like, just the perception around Cody Ceci is probably such that it was just like no one was going to, like, unless you're retaining money, at which point why?
In a weird way, he had more value to them than anybody else. Because yeah,
that's right.
If you're a GM, you're like, I don't want Cody Ceci at 3.5. No thanks. But at the same
time, if I do that, everyone's going to scream at me.
Exactly. I don't want to get yelled at.
One of the big motivating factors in all our lives, I feel like.
That's it. That's all anybody looks for is ways to avoid getting yelled at.
And yeah, it's what it's all about. And then, yeah, like, people were thinking they might trade for a goalie, but it's like, I don't know. Have you seen how Stu Skinner's playing lately? That's not a guy they're going to try to. God, I heard people going, and they might bring Jack Campbell back for the play. Don't do that. Here's a bit of advice to you. Don't let him anywhere near your net. That would be a mistake.
If Jack Campbell's playing meaningful minutes for them at any point, then that will have meant something. That will have meant something catastrophic is going wrong.
Yeah, he is up to 9.15 down in Bakersfield.
Probably better than you'd expect. Better than he was playing initially.
Not even probably. Yeah. Oh, no, and that's with a, like, legitimately
catastrophic beginning.
Start.
Yeah. To the start of the Jack Campbell Bakersfield era.
Yep. But with that all having
this
been
is
said,
just
yeah,
such, it's, just, but like this discussion is just such an indication of, you know, it hints at something much more negative about the Edmonton Oilers is we're like, well, they could maybe use a goalie and they could probably use some help on the right side. And Henrik's good because he gives them help in multiple positions. Like, there's holes all over the place and they just didn't have the resources necessary to plug any of them on, you know, all that meaningfully, even though I do, like I said, I do like the Henrik condition well enough.
Yeah, no, like their problem is once again, going to be who's going to score when Connor and Leon are off the ice.
Yep.
But the thing is, all they need to do is not give up goals when those two are off the ice. Because those two are going to score plenty of goals themselves, right? Yep. And, you know, like, if your fifth best forward is like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you're in pretty good shape. Dope. You just need to be able to wrestle these people to a draw. And they've never been able to do that. And, you know, could they... With these additions, I mean, their chances of doing it are certainly better than they were a week ago. So,
yeah, they added, like I said, a blandly decent guy in Henrik, right? Where he's fine. He's like fine at everything, not great at anything. He's not going to kill you really in any element of the game. And he's a good guy to have riding shotgun with better players, which I feel like, you know, that could be useful for them. Certainly more so than other teams. But totally. Yeah, it's a tough deal.
Yep. That's just, especially because Vegas was like, oh, we'll just get like four all-stars. How's that sound?
I think Edmonton is one of those teams too, where you said it, dude, like it looks, if the deadline would have been Thursday and we wouldn't have seen anything that we saw, you know, down the stretch there, the last day or two, Edmonton would have come out of it looking a lot better. But like, they suffer by comparison because you really do see a lack of creativity there.
Relative. Winnipeg went out and did something big. Dallas, not so much, but of course they did add Tanev. Colorado, we just talked about. The only other team that really, two teams, I guess, that didn't really do anything were LA and Vancouver, who happened to be in their division. But I have a theory about what's going on in the Pacific. Everyone is trying to avoid that 2-3 matchup because you're like, oh, one of the teams we have to play in that 2-3 matchup is a huge pain in the ass to play against. Mm-hmm. I don't want to draw LA in the first round. I don't want to draw Edmonton in the first round. I want to draw Vegas in the first round. And now Vegas is like, okay, one of the all-stars we traded for is hurt until 2 weeks before the regular season ends or whatever, you know? So that helps keep them out of that. But I don't know. It gets to a point where it's like, would you rather play Dallas, Edmonton, or LA or Vegas? I don't know which one of those I'd want to play.
That alone should stop teams from trying to get cute, because it's like you'd start to outthink yourself there. You're gonna have to play a pretty good team no matter what, right? Like there's no particularly easy route. And the Kings cap situation was a total disaster too. Like I think that stopped them from doing some stuff that they otherwise probably would have been in on. Vancouver, though, it's a bummer.
Didn't do anything.
Rarely say it about a Jim Rutherford team. They missed opportunity, feels like.
Yeah, and again, their hands were kind of tied, and they already made their big trade in a lot of ways. But boy, you want to talk about something that would have been interesting if it had happened. Flipping Lindholm, that was a rumor that came out. Just like, oh, we tried it, didn't fucking work. Try something
I'd be interested in how far along they got with that kind of discussion, or who brought up the point. Which front office brought up the idea of them flipping Lindholm? I'm not sure. Yeah. I think it was the Canucks.
Oh, I would be a little surprised. I think, you know, that's one of those like, oh, you know, now that you mention it, it's a pretty good idea. They're still first in the West, you know.
I love them.
It slipped a little bit there, but they're still first in the West.
It's been the story of their season, man. Just when you think that it's going to fall apart, they rattle off four straight wins, and then they're back, and that's where they are right now.
Yep. Another big adder, I guess you'd say, Jake Guentzel and Evgeny Kuznetsov to Carolina.
I love it.
Guentzel in particular is a guy where it's like, oh, the Hurricanes have needed a player like that for 15 years.
Absolutely. He's a perfect fit in a lot of different ways. I just go back to the fact that, you know, generates a lot of chances, yes, but also is involved with them leading to real life goals. He's good at that. And it's not just a Crosby creation. You know, people maybe... there is an understandable impulse to say, like, just how good is this dude, right? But I love it. And I'm not going to say that I like Kuznetsov as much either, because he's just been so catastrophically bad, but they needed to do something down the middle. You need to have some other skill element, like, in your top, is your second or third line center, and they had none of that. So that one's fun. I think the odds of it working out are maybe not great, but whatever. It's still an interesting thought.
It's worth the gamble. Him, you know, obviously a lot of stuff going on personally for him that would have affected his on-ice play. Mm-hmm. But if he's coming out of the player treatment program or whatever it's called,
in a better spot, and if that translates into, you know,
and he's motivated.
He was not that bad last year.
No.
He wasn't great, but he was certainly, he's got some solid play or solid production in his recent history, right? And I think if you're Carolina, that's a decent gamble to make, especially when you look at the fact that Jack Drury was their second line center coming into deadline day. And you're like, okay,
that's not going
to
fly.
Similar to the Colorado discussion where you're like, something's got to be done here. And there's no easy fit on the market for middle six centers who can push the pace offensively. So what do we do? And in Colorado's case, it was getting creative with the Sabres and flipping Byron for Middlestead. And in Carolina's case, it was, you know, taking on a pretty high risk high risk project in the form of Kuznetsov.
Yep. Let me ask you this. Because people have been asking me, you know, what do you think? Like, who are the best teams in the Eastern Conference? And to me, for weeks, the answer has been Florida and then nobody, really.
Yep.
I don't trust the Rangers in the postseason.
I don't know how you
can't trust the Bruins. They're a team that doesn't win a lot lately. The Leafs, how are you ever going to trust the Leafs?
Yeah. You know, and I think now it's Panthers by themselves and Carolina by themselves and then another tier below that.
Yes. Right. I think that's about right.
I think there's still a pretty, for me, there's a defined line between Florida and the rest of the conference. But man, it either by themselves as the second group or at the very tippy top is Carolina.
It's either them or the Rangers. And the Rangers did make some, I'd say, small additions, maybe.
They added guys at the bottom six. You're like, okay, this is fine. Wennberg, yeah, he could help. I think Roslovic is, you know, better than nothing.
Sure, yeah.
Not weirdly, but Columbus had showcased him for a couple weeks ahead of the deadline, and he put together a point per game player over his last 10 or 12 games, which is hilarious. But, you know, we're talking about a team that is adding bottom six pieces. Like, that's nothing to get super excited about.
Yeah. But, you know, again, the Rangers, it's kind of the same thing with Edmonton, where it's like, as long as those top guys are on the ice, like, you're gonna outscore the opponent. You have the elite goaltending, in theory, not always in actual practice this season. And then, again, like, if you can just get the bottom six to, like, 50-50,
mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to see a path through the playoffs for the Rangers than, especially if they remain the number one seed in that division and they draw. We'll talk about the East wild card in a minute, because that's a mess. But if they can hold on to that top spot in the division, their path forward is like so
totally
obvious.
Totally.
I'm
just taking Carolina's roster over theirs at this point. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, with Carolina, it's like how far can you trust the goaltending, right? And can't stay healthy. When they do stay healthy, the best of the bunch is Freddie Anderson, probably, mm-hmm. with all due respect to Kochetkov. But, you know, at least as a proven commodity. But I think it's more, maybe more of a push for me, Carolina and the Rangers.
It's fair, yeah.
But I'd rather have the top end guys on the Rangers than the Hurricanes, especially because of the goaltending. But yeah, anyway, 1 through 20, I think you'd say probably Carolina. Anyway, let's talk about those Panthers. They had Tarasenko. They had Anthony Duclair.
They added Kyle Okposo.
Kyle Okposo. Yeah. And again, Okposo is just like a depth, good in the room guy.
Yeah.
Nothing to get upset about there or whatever.
Yeah. They gave up nothing for him. Like, I'll take Kyle Okposo for free on my team.
For sure. Yep. So yeah, just the rich get richer in the Eastern Conference at the top of it anyway.
That's, you can't fault them, man. They are the beneficiaries of, you know, playing in Florida in a variety of ways, and that helped Tarasenko. That is why they got Tarasenko for
100%,
four different reasons, and it didn't have all that much to do with the on ice, you know, with the on ice fit. But he's exactly what they needed. They needed some dude to mix in there that didn't force them to play Nick Cousins on a line with Matthew Tkachuk, and they went out and got it.
Yeah, and like Tarasenko, you know. To me, the reason I was a little iffy on this trade is just seems like the vibes are bad. You know what I mean? Like, he's a decent enough player, but it just seems like the vibes are
bad. I think he would have been a potentially bad acquisition for a lot of other teams, just not this one.
Yeah, they have enough to
I can imagine some other – if the situations were – if he could just end up wherever Ottawa could get the best package for him, I think someone probably would have made a mistake. But as it stands, playing in Florida, it makes a little more sense to me.
Yeah, they just have the roster and the veterans or whatever to absorb a bad vibes can only do one thing, guy.
Totally, absolutely.
That was never going to work in Ottawa.
Ottawa, you know? Can't afford just having a guy who's, you know, a shooter basically, who's
a kind of one dimensional player. Yeah,
Florida can though. What they needed.
Yep. Absolutely. And I like the Duclair ad, especially, you know, they know him. So
Duclair went to Tampa.
Oh, that's right. Yes. You're right about that. Well, they don't know him then. Never mind. He doesn't play for Florida at all. I wrote down Florida, but I think the reason why I wrote that down is because Tampa is in the state of Florida.
It is.
And also because I'm very stupid.
A lot of people don't know that Tampa is in Florida.
I'm mentioning this and people are like, I don't think so, man. And then like South Carolina, I'm like, no, no, no. It's in Florida.
Here's other places. Orlando is in Florida. St. Petersburg is in Florida.
No, I know that. Yeah.
Kissimmee is in Florida. Gainesville is in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good song, Tim.
That's all I got. That's true. It's true. I don't know why that was number one. Why is that not the first Florida city I think of?
So yeah, you're right. It's not Duclair. It's yep. That's a little stupid mistake by me. Yeah, that was Tampa's only big ad though, if I'm not mistaken.
Depends on what you think about Matt Dumba.
No, I stick by what I said then.
Understandable.
Yeah. I mean, Dumba's a classic guy where it's just like, he wasn't on good teams the last couple of years. Could Tampa, in theory, a good team, put him in a better position to succeed than, say, Arizona or last year's Minnesota Wild did?
I think Arizona wants a first round pick for Matt Dumba was maybe my favorite deadline subplot. To see it yes. brought to its logical end was a lot of fun.
You know, I was looking at stats the other day. I might have said this on the show last week, but I guess it bears repeating. 5-on-5. What do you want to guess the league average or where Tampa is in the league rankings in save percentage? 5-on-5.
They're still very low. Because I looked at that recently too, and I was surprised by how far down they were.
Abysmal, I think is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm going to say third from the bottom.
Second from the bottom. Yeah. Even worse than the Flyers and the Devils and the Flames and Chicago. The only team worse than them. They spent a little bit of money on goaltending this year. Crazy it didn't work out for them. The Ottawa Senators.
We got Tampa. Tampa is actually second from the bottom in 5-on-5 save percentage at the moment.
That's what I said.
So I thought you said there. I'm sorry. I thought you said there are two teams ahead of them.
Nope.
Overall,
or I might have done that, but I didn't.
Overall, they're 30th at 5-on-5. They're 31st.
Big thumbs up.
Oops.
To me, you know, cost of doing business. They're like, hey, well, Andre Vasilevsky, we need to play you 89 games every single year forever, and he's like, okay, no problem, and it worked. Until it didn't.
And then they started the season with a couple months of Jonas Johansson. And
he wasn't even that bad, though.
He was not that. Well, he was not bad at the start, but now he's normalized at .888 on the season. Yeah,
he's been Jonas Johansson.
Yes.
So, yeah, let's actually talk about where Tampa's at in the standings. Because I think looking at the standings, the West playoff picture is basically sewn up. St. Louis is a mile back of Vegas for the last wild card spot. They would have to win a lot of games and have Vegas continue losing a lot to. And I just don't see that happening.
I think we're at the point where it's like you're talking 6 points. And the Blues have played 64 games to the Golden Knights, 64.
Right.
Or 65 to 64, rather. Yeah, it's not happening.
Nope. But in the East, it's very interesting.
Sure is.
You're in a race with the Philadelphia Flyers, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Detroit Red Wings, and the New York Islanders. Some people will say the Capitals. I will not be among them.
I have steadfastly ignored them as anything other than one of the few worst teams in the league for the entire season, and I still
Money Puck
I'll
has them at like
to do that.
Yeah, Money Puck has them at like 18% to make the playoffs, which feels right to me. Like things could go really bad for four teams ahead of them, and they sneak in. But yeah, it's very interesting because the Flyers all of a sudden are playing like a sub playoff team. Mm-hmm. Maybe not like as bad as everybody thought they would be, but not a playoff team, let's say. Tampa, kind of the same thing, but again, maybe that's just a goaltending thing. Things are kind of catching up with the Detroit Red Wings, it looks like to me.
I think, I guess you got to be careful to read all that much into what a GM does or doesn't do.
Yeah.
But when Yzerman,
especially one like this,
especially
right?
One like him, but my man did nothing. I was like, okay.
Shemek. I don't know.
I don't think I bought them as like a legit playoff team for a variety of reasons, but mostly coming down to the fact that they were egregiously outchanced and they were for the duration of the season and had just been converting on those chances. So good for them, but that's not necessarily a sustainable way to go about doing business. Man, five straight. It was like right when I was like, Dom and I had this discussion. I was like, I think they've just built up enough of a cushion where we can not write them in pen, but start treating them as like a team that's probably going to make the playoffs. And they promptly went out, started a 5-game losing streak and did nothing at the deadline. And it's like, oh, okay. I probably amended my thinking a little bit too early as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, I mean, so I got in trouble a couple of weeks ago for being like, all these people go, well, look, the expected goals numbers, they don't account for pre-shot movement and everything. And it's like, yeah, when a team shoots 80% for 2 weeks or whatever they did, you're going to start looking, like naturally, you're going to start looking for reasons that they're outperforming, frankly, abysmal underlying numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have plenty of talent at the top of that lineup, right?
Yeah, but the problem is if you're in a spot because of top end talent in a shooting heater, when one of those top end pieces gets hurt, like Dylan Larkin has, and if you start to come back a little bit to earth,
you're going to come back board, really
guess
hard.
What? Yeah, it's not going to go the way you want it to.
No, and I think the thing is that, again, people started being like, the things that the Detroit Red Wings do well, all that shit. And it's like, you know, if you watch the Red Wings a lot, it was mostly Red Wings people, like media people and fans saying this. But if you watch the Red Wings a lot, again, you're just going to be like, well, they're this good. And again, totally natural. But once you start doing the, you know, the PDO is actually sustainable bullshit, you should know by now that isn't so. You know what I mean? Like, you should have an 19 understanding.
19 out of 20 cases, 99 out of 100 cases,
I was going to say, like, the first team that sustains this forever, or the next team that does it, will be the first one.
Isn't that why we watch, though? For the hope that the Detroit Red Wings are the team that bucks the trend. I sincerely believe that. I'm like, it's going to happen at some point.
I don't think it is, man. Like
and maybe this is them, but that's part of the fun though, is recognizing that intellectually and continuing to watch regardless. For me, it is.
Well, no, I guess what I'm saying is this. You can. It's the same thing we were saying about the Canucks early in the season. Enjoy this fucking heater. This is great. You got a good team there. And like I don't think anybody's going to mistake Detroit's cup chances going into the year for Vancouver's.
Mm-hmm.
Even before they both of them went on a heater.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
You're
right.
Vancouver has the elite players.
The high end talent
every
is just
level,
is just impossible to argue with position. In Vancouver. Yeah.
Yes. And so, like, if you're Vancouver, you're like, oh, okay, we can fucking really, rely on Demko being good all year and Hughes being good all year. and Pettersson being good all year. Can you really say that for all the guys in Detroit?
Not to the same degree, no.
Not even close, right? Like, it's we're talking about two. And for me, what I've said all along about Detroit is, you know, they improved their roster such that maybe their ceiling for this year is like seventh or eighth place team.
I agree with that.
And that, you know, I think you would have said if everything went right for Vancouver, they could have been like fourth or fifth in the West. And they've outperformed that. Vancouver, yeah, or Detroit's outperformed that,
yeah, you're right,
as well. Vancouver's outperformed that, and Detroit has too. And talking, you know, there are different levels to what outperformance means.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I just, for me, the variable for Detroit up until the last week has been the conference. Like, I just look at the teams that they're in competition with, and I'm just like, this is not a serious group of teams. The Flyers, who we just talked about selling off, wisely selling off. Tampa, who's just seems disorganized this season in a variety of ways. The Islanders, the Caps. Like, what are we what are we talking about here? So a week ago or 10 days ago, I'm like, yeah, the Red Wings have banked enough and they have a high enough floor where they can at least outrun those teams, at least outrun three of those teams. And you're talking about the Flyers, the Islanders, the Caps, and in some combination.
For sure.
And it might not happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, their ceiling is seventh.
The Islanders are playing well, and all the and they have the Sorokin trump card. That dude could go into sicko mode for 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then before you know it, they're in third in the Metro, and the Flyers or whatever are a point or two ahead of the Red Wings.
It's
deeply possible.
The other thing is, Patrick Waugh had the bright idea of, what if I actually play like all the best players on my team, like their star
Imagine
players?
That.
Crazy.
He's a disruptor, Patrick Waugh.
That's right. Yeah. He's like, I'll pull the goalie with 23 minutes left in the game. And also I'll put the good players on the power play together. Lane Lambert's solution to this was, what if I put Matt Martin out there a little bit more? Might go my way.
Is it possible to play Casey Zizekas for 25 minutes a night? I'd like to see how that works out.
We need to give him McDavid minutes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all we have to talk about this
Great.
Week, right?
Oh, and not a moment too soon.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
That's right. Oh, I guess we forgot about Tortorella getting suspended. Do we have any big thoughts on that?
No, I don't. I very officially have no thoughts on that. I was like, I don't feel like writing about this. What do you think about it?
I think that if you tell the refs you're not going to leave after they kick you out of the game, you're going to get in trouble.
Totally. Yeah, he knew it. He's. I don't think there was any... Like, he had to know.
Yeah, of course. Obviously.
All right, I'm getting suspended for this. But you know what? It's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it because fuck these guys. That's what he was saying.
It's like when a baseball manager gets kicked out of the game. He doesn't just, like, go back to the dugout. He turns his hat around and he kicks some dirt at the guy, you know? Like, it's the same idea. If you're going to get fucking tossed, get tossed for a really good reason, you know?
I think that's, you know what? To me, that's the most relatable thing to get tossed for, though.
Telling the refs to go fuck themselves? Absolutely.
No, just
man.
Be like, I'm not, you know what? I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah, he went fucking ape shit. Like, again, could I have used him throwing some sticks on the ice or something too? Yeah, absolutely. Instead of just going like, I'm not fucking leaving. Fuck you. Get the fuck over here and explain something to me.
I think that's funnier than throwing sticks.
I mean, the visual,
don't
though,
you
know, who was the guy? Was it Jim Playfair?
Yep.
Chucking sticks on the ice. Awesome.
One of the greats.
Yeah. At least in terms of throwing stuff on the ice, that's one of the great coaching moments of all time.
I guess I didn't really understand the Torts discourse, honestly. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. He got this pissed Torts and did something funny and got suspended. Where we, what was
what else do we need? Well, I saw a bunch of people going like, or like Elliot Friedman was like, oh, the league, the league wasn't happy about this. And people were like, what aren't they happy about? It's like, oh, it's, I guess it's when he yelled at the officials and refused to leave the bench after being ejected. That's what the league was probably mad about, in my opinion.
And then was there like a contingent of people that were like, they shouldn't have suspended him? Like, yeah, of course they should have.
If you're John Tortorella, you don't do that going, well, surely I'll never have further discipline for this.
It ends tonight. I'm sure I won't hear about this in the morning from whoever.
So funny. Yeah. It rocks. I'm a fan of John Tortorella said ACAB, you know? And that's what it boils down to for me. I don't trust these refs.
No, and here's the other thing. I like John Tortorella. I do.
Not me so much.
Cancel me, I say.
Can I say this,
it's though? Like, what's your cancelable hockey opinion? I'm like, probably the John Tortorella rules.
Can I say this, though? Yeah. This is going to have, if I can bring up another Calgary Flames-related incident, this is going to have a Dennis Weidman effect on the Philadelphia Flyers. Where it's like, oh no, every game for the rest of the year, the power players are going to be 5-2 for their opponents.
Dennis Weidman, man. Remember
that? He maybe didn't mean to shove that linesman, and the rest of the year, the Flames are like at the red line, and the linesman's like, that was offside, my friend. That doesn't count.
Sorry. it really is funny. That's still Dennis Weidman, pretty long, pretty solid career. That's still the first thing I think of, and anytime you bring up his name.
Yeah.
I think he did good it on player. Purpose.
I kind of think so, too. Although, now I'm trying to remember, wasn't it a situation where he maybe had gotten his bell rung a little bit?
Yep, yeah. That was it. And that is obviously understandable. That's a pretty decent defense if you gotta come up with one for that, because he'd gotten
Here's
hit.
The thing, though. They didn't buy it.
Nope. You know why?
That's not true.
Because you can't check the ref, just like you can't refuse to leave the bench after you get thrown out. It's the way it goes.
In my opinion, you're not allowed to knock over a linesman.
It's probably not a great... call me crazy. I just don't think that's a precedent that the NHL wants to set, is that it's actually okay to elbow linesmen or blindside linesmen.
However, they will, of course, allow you to say anything you want to the refs, no matter what happens. So,
guess so.
Yeah, I guess our take on it is it was funny. that's the big.
Again, over the weekend, because me and Sean and Frankie Corrado have like a just a we've started texting about shit since we're supposed to have a show together and should have an idea of the way the winds are blowing on that stuff. So we talked about that, and Frankie kind of loved it, but I was just like, yeah, I mean, whatever. Do we have to do this about this one? Like he freaked out and did something funny and he's going to get suspended 2 games for it. Like, who cares?
There's a coach in college hockey who, if he ever feels like he got fucked by the refs in a given game, and you're not going to believe this, every coach in college hockey is like, these refs are terrible.
Yeah.
And they're right. They're right more often than not. Mm-hmm. But there's a coach in college hockey where first thing he does when he comes into the room after a game, like the press conference room after a game where he gets fucked by the refs, he goes, do not ask me about the refs. Don't even get me started. You're going to get me in really trouble. Funny. It's my favorite recurring bit in the college hockey world by a lot. It's so good every time, because you always know when it's going to happen. And then he comes in and you know, it's the I didn't do it boy. I'm just like, yeah, he said it.
Let's go. Yeah, I just love – I love that the league and the things was like, we just can't – this mustn't continue to happen.
Of course not.
Of course. The hand-wringing, I guess, on some level is funny because they did the Judd Apatow, like, he could have killed him bit about right. after the Oscar slap. But, like, of course that's what the league's going to say. We don't have to take it all that seriously.
Well, I mean, I do. It's the most serious thing. To disrespect the officials like that? Oh, man. I don't think you're allowed to.
Officials and comedians, they're truly, they're the real frontline.
They're the last
first responders. It's true.
Nobody says the truth more than a stand-up comedian. Why don't you hit them with the plugs? We'll get the hell out of here.
All right. Like I said, my name is Sean Gentile. I am a writer for The Athletic. And me and McIndoo have a podcast. As I said, the two of us every week and Frankie Corrado on alternating weeks. And we just started that about a month or so ago, and it's going well. Frank is a good dude. Can't really speak to McIndoo necessarily.
The
jury's still out on him.
The name of that podcast, by the way, mm-hmm. Backstabbers Inc.
The Traitors. It's true.
I'm one of the most betrayed podcasters that you're ever going to meet, and no one talks about it.
The Betrayers.
Yeah, that's you guys. And then for me, EP Ringside, we're doing a whole bunch of like free agent stuff as, you know, college and junior seasons end and your team signs a guy. We have big write-ups on all the best players that will get that treatment who are undrafted. Drafted players, it's a different story. But head over there, and then I'm really ramping up my NCAA coverage because the playoffs in some conferences began this past weekend. And everybody else, they start Friday.
It's a good like your shit's always such a good resource for me because I don't pay attention to college hockey at all until around this time of year. So I'm like, all right, what did I miss?
Nice thing to say. Wow. I just love it, man. This is like my favorite shit in the world is college hockey. So
I can only watch so much, you know?
I do know, yeah, of course. Now for me, it you know, infinite resource.
Mm-hmm.
Time I have for college hockey. All of it. Thank you. I'm going to, I think it's at least three playoff games between Friday and Saturday. And then if there are any, anything else on Sunday, I'll go to that too. Why not? But yeah.
Good for you.
And then thanks, brother. BC and BU playing, you know, whatever, like a mile apart. At one game is at 4 and one game is at 7:30. Perfect for me.
It's like they scheduled it with you in mind.
It's for the sickos out there. And
is there any other kind of college hockey fan?
Not really, no. I mean, these are people who were like, when Cutter Gauthier refused to go to the Ducks, like people, Flyers fans were going to BC games just to boo him.
Is that, I missed that. Is that true? Yeah. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
Like they had brought signs like Cutter the Traitor or whatever. And look, if anybody knows about getting betrayed, it's me, right? So like I get it from those, but like they had signs that people were very mad that BC was like, yeah, you can't bring that into the game, dog. What are you talking about?
Going up to Flyers fans in the concourse and saying, I was betrayed once. Very, very recently, in fact. Yeah.
You wouldn't believe it. And they were like, oh, your betrayal is 10 times worse than anything I've ever experienced. And I'm saying, I agree. I'm the most betrayed man in podcasting. And then the other podcast, speaking of, is the Puck Soup Patreon, patreon.com/pucksoup. All kinds of bonus content over there, including later this week, it'll be me, it'll be SG, and it'll be the aforementioned Grund Grudimpy. Kind of fumbled my words on that one. Oh, well, it's too late now.
Grunde Wishabimpe?
I think that's his name, yeah. We'll be talking about anything that isn't related to hockey on a little podcast called Stick to Soup. No, in fact, no sports at all.
Love it. Best kind of show.
Try as Greg might, quite frankly. I have to keep going. No, 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 sir. That's a different show.
Stiff arming amid every turn.
You got to, man. I mean, we're going to be talking about a Weezer tour on that show. What
you
else
sure?
is there? I think it might come up. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, everybody. And we'll talk to you next week when presumably Sean McIndoo will be back. Bye-bye.